Hi, it's Karen Webster for Payments.com, and I'm here today with Dean Levitt, who is the CEO of Boost Payment Solutions. Hi, Dean. Thanks for joining me today.
Hi, Karen. How are you? Glad to be here.
So just a little context. Boost provides a number of turnkey solutions that help businesses move off of paper-based payments to electronic alternatives. So I thought that would be helpful context to give everyone before we dive into our conversation today. So there's a lot going on in the B2B payments world, and a lot of it is driven by the friction that is just inherent in this massive ecosystem. I thought it would be interesting to get your perspective as someone who's been in the B2B space for a while to see what kind of changes you've seen evolve over the years. And what hasn't changed but needs to, and why?
Well, I think we're seeing certainly an increased importance from both the buyer's and supplier's perspective on data. Data is becoming increasingly important. It really is, as both sides of the transaction move to more sophisticated, or for those smaller companies, less expensive ERP systems. Their reliance on data is becoming very important. Remittance data, the ability to automatically reconcile transactions. That's something that wasn't necessarily paramount 3, 4, 5 years ago. We're also seeing an increased focus on the part of both AP and AR departments on operational efficiencies. And this includes a focus on price and I would say a more sophisticated awareness on the true cost associated with payments, both from the payer and payee perspective. And most recently, we're seeing a real focus on the need for solutions that eliminate risks associated with exposure to sensitive data. That's an area that, again, recently has become very important to a lot of suppliers, more particularly that receive card payments. So those three are areas that we're seeing a lot of focus on at recent.
So two of the three really have to do with data, and I wanna go back to something you said first up, which was there really wasn't a focus on data. Was it not important because it was hard to get, or is it now important because something else is causing its importance to kind of rise to the top of the prioritization list?
Well, as it relates to remittance data, for companies that are migrating towards more automated systems in their company, the payments component of it is becoming increasingly important to fold into that automation process. So while remittance data has always been available, it's now available in formats that can be easily ingested by these AR and AP systems, so that their processes by which they reconcile and work with that data is much easier.
So what are they doing now that they have access to this data? What kinds of things are you seeing? Are there innovations popping up that are made possible because data is now easily accessible and in a format that can be easily consumed?
Well, there are. And there are also new programs and processes that are being developed to expedite the delivery of that data, one of which is our own Boost Intercept, which provides suppliers with remittance data in formats that were previously unavailable to them, where large suppliers, say, receiving payments that in each payment may house hundreds or thousands of invoices, that reconciliation process would have previously been very cumbersome, where it would have required an allocation of HR to work on it. And now, by enabling that the data in an automated fashion, it can easily be reconciled within their AR system. You're also seeing this data being used for companies to better manage their business. Data has been available, but the ability to convert that data into information that can be used to establish metrics, KPIs, and other types of tools a company can use to run the business.
So, Dean, one of the things you mentioned when we started our conversation was the need to improve the efficiency of the AR and AP operation. And certainly one of the big drivers to that must be looking at paper checks, since that is a very typical method of payment in the B2B payment realm. What are some of the factors that you're seeing driving the interest in moving away from checks to electronic alternatives, and why has it taken so long?
Sure. That's a good question. Certainly some of the drivers that are motivating payers to look to alternatives such as commercial cards, as an example, are kind of a combination of a couple of things. First, there are rebates available for those payers that simply elect to pay suppliers or vendors via card in lieu of a check. It's a whole new revenue source for them that they otherwise wouldn't have. There's also the opportunity to extend their days payable outstanding, thereby getting working capital benefits to the extent they put a transaction on a card. They then have a grace period, in most cases, to pay back the bank that has actually extended the funds to the supplier. And there also are operational efficiencies associated with moving from manual processes over to something like a card or other automated payment methods. I think that the primary reasons why it's been slower than most people perhaps thought is really inertia. You know, inertia is quite powerful in business. Sometimes you have certain personnel that may be in decision-making positions regarding how a company is going to pay its suppliers or vendors that frankly may not know or be aware of alternatives. They may not care or be incented to increase efficiencies or perhaps even generate new revenue sources. The other thing is that there's a lot of erroneous information out in the marketplace about what's involved in utilizing cards on the payer side or perhaps even receiving commercial card payments on the supplier side. And there's misperceptions about cost, about the systems or work that needs to be done to convert over to card acceptance capability. And, this all needs to be really dispelled through outreach and education, which is one of the areas where Boost spends most of its time on behalf of its customers.
So I was going to ask you about that. How much of the inertia is driven by the perception that it's really just very difficult and time-consuming to move off of the inefficient paper model to something that may be more efficient and digital but would require perhaps a different process be developed and then deployed?
I think it plays a pretty big role. To the extent there is this perception that I have to do a lot, I as a payer in the AP department or I as a, somebody in the AR department who handles the receipt of these payments, I'm less inclined to spend a lot of time or prioritize that to the top of the list of the many things that I'm working on right now. But when both sides of these equations learn that it's actually a fairly simple process to move over to be able to pay with a card or to be able to receive a payment, and in fact, as we mentioned earlier, receive all the benefits associated with card acceptance, such as the data and various other benefits, then they start to get involved with the process, and that's when you see more migrations. But it's there's often a missing piece of information out there on both sides.
Is there inertia on both sides, or is one side a little bit more interested than the other in adopting something that is an electronic alternative?
There is inertia on both sides, but generally you will find that purchasers tend to be at least initially, more motivated to migrate over to a commercial card product, whereas suppliers need to be educated and reached out to more to truly understand the benefits and the real costs associated with card acceptance. Again, the enemy here often is the misperceptions about what's involved with card acceptance, but there's clearly inertia on both sides.
Yeah, I was gonna ask about that, because I think the perception is on the supplier side, yeah, I'll get paid, but I'm going to take a haircut, and no one likes to take a haircut. But the other thing, which may or may not be a factor, I'd love your opinion on this, is that just the physical act of acceptance on the retail payment side, you know, that can be a hassle. And I'd love to get your view on the differences or similarities on the enterprise or commercial payment side. Do those issues exist as well?
Well, if I understand your question correctly, you're talking about the difference between commercial card acceptance and retail card acceptance in the consumer arena.
Yeah, thinking about, you know, if I'm a retailer and I am being presented with a new way to be paid, there's often, you know, integration issues. There's often other things that I have to go through in order to accept a new form of payment. What do suppliers have to do? Is it the same thing?
It's not the same thing in that in most cases, certainly the vast majority of the cases we deal with, there is no physical card. So the word credit card, the card piece is actually a misnomer. We're dealing primarily with virtual accounts, so there is no actual physical card being presented. As far as what a supplier needs to do to get set up, is actually very little. There are a lot of different ways now that we can expedite their boarding on a system. In fact, it can now be done entirely online. The amount of information we need to collect from a supplier is quite limited. We often receive a lot of information from their customer, the payer, that has engaged us to reach out to the supplier on their behalf. As far as the process itself, they do not need to have any hardware, any software. They just need to give us the designated depository account into which they want the funds deposited, and let us know who they want to receive the remittance data and in what format, so we can make sure that it's a completely automated process. Our goal is to really eliminate any work on the part of the supplier. So there's no real call to action on their part. It's merely a notification that a transaction has taken place and that the funds will be deposited directly into their account. You know, there's a big difference between a commercial relationship between vendor and vendee and a relationship between a consumer and a retailer. Relationship between vendor-vendee is it's an existing relationship. It's often contractually based. You're often dealing with entities that have been doing business with each other for a while. So in that respect, it's quite different than that chance encounter between a consumer cardholder and a store.
So the risk profile is very different, and therefore the boarding and underwriting process is also very different.
Very different. And, you know, like most businesses, certainly in the financial arena, pricing is impacted by risk. And when you're dealing with, transactions that involve companies that have been and will continue to do business together, especially when you're dealing with the method by which the payments are made. One of the areas we talked earlier about is security and access to sensitive card data. The manner in which we handle transactions is that our suppliers never even see card data. So ultimately, that's reflected in the pricing, and the commercial credit card community has recently and will continue to adjust pricing for suppliers for business-to-business transactions that really better reflect that relationship, that profile of risk. And you're beginning to see some meaningful changes on that front so that the cost of that transaction better reflects that relationship.
Got it. So as we wrap up, you described the pricing of the payment as one of the changes that you think are pretty significant and that we'll see evolve over the next year or so. What are some other things that you think we should be looking out for in the way of innovation in the B2B payments environment?
Well, I think you're going to see a continued groundswell movement away from checks and other manual types of payment processes. I think you are going to see much more of a focus on data-rich solutions from both the buyers and the supplier's perspective. I think you're going to see continued focus on rate structures within the commercial card arena, already beginning to see some of the changes for sure. I think you're also going to see some customized rate structures. We do quite a bit in that area where it's kind of a well-kept secret, not intentionally, but it just seems to not be that well-known in the marketplace that proprietary rate structures can be established between a particular buyer and a particular supplier so that the cost reflects that relationship and the contractual terms between those two entities. So I think you're going to see a lot more of those, commonly referred to as BSAs or bilateral service agreements. And I think that you're going to see a willingness on the part of both payers and suppliers to work within those adjusted cost constructs. So percentage-wise, you may see rebate revenues be reduced, and you might see issuers even spend more time focused on lower-cost products, but with a view towards the absolute value of the revenues increasing dramatically. Or put another way, there are certain relationships between buyers and suppliers that unless the cost is adjusted accordingly to really reflect that relationship, these transactions may not ultimately find their way onto a commercial card. So I think a lot of the changes you're going to see may be cost-related, certainly data-related, and the operational efficiencies gained by moving to automated payments. You're going to see a lot more movement towards that.
And Dean, a final question just to clarify on the cost innovations, if you will. Is that really being driven because suppliers are pushing back on some of these very high value transactions that just wouldn't flow across the card rails? Or is this also nervousness over what could be regulatory pressures on those fees?
Well, I think certainly you'd be best served speaking with the issuers and the brands regarding regulatory issues. I think what we're generally seeing is a market adjustment to create a pricing construct that really better serves a transaction that really wasn't in the mix, 3 to 5 years ago. Companies utilizing commercial cards to pay for larger line of business spend is something that's relatively new. And I think the pricing constructs you're seeing are really being designed to better reflect that transaction and that relationship. So I think it's just market forces at work. And to the extent there's a regulatory component, again, that's something that would probably be better answered by those that are dealing with that day in, day out.
Gotcha. Well, Dean, it was really great to get caught up and to get a better perspective on how you and Boost sees the world of B2B payments and some of the things that we should all be looking out for in the way of innovation, or as we like to say, what's next in B2B payments, and hope to see you again very soon. I know we'll be seeing you at our conference in October, and we do look forward to that. Thanks very much.
Yes, thank you so much. I look forward to seeing you at your first B2B event here in New York City.